Once more unto the breach, dear friends. I'll close the wall up with our English dead. Good morning again, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. So that may be a bit of an inflationary idea. I don't know that there are a huge number of boys and girls watching this morning. Saturday morning, unless children have changed drastically in the last 5 minutes, Saturday morning is not generally spent listening to a radio program about economics. But if you are listening to this and you're not being held down to do it, thank you for listening, and we appreciate that, boys and girls. This is the Personal Wealth Coach, and speaking to you at this very moment is Jake McClure. On the line with me, I have
Jeff McClure.
And together we are the Bald Avengers. No, we're not. We are bald.
We could call ourselves that, the Bald Avengers, but that doesn't have a ring to it.
No. So instead, we're going to call ourselves the Personal Wealth Coach, which doesn't make a lot of sense because there's two of us. Naming conventions.
You know, football teams and so on have multiple coaches. We could call ourselves the Personal Wealth Coaches, but that would be inaccurate because the company's name, the firm's name, is the Personal Wealth Coach.
Right. It's like the firm, and this is leads us on into our disclosures. Would you like to take the disclosure?
Well, we are, but the first disclosure is that Jake and I, this is Jeff speaking, have positions as the principals of the company called the firm called the Personal Wealth Coach, which is a registered investment advisory firm registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission. Not that they approve or disapprove of what we're doing. They just simply are a regulatory agency. And see, that's the first disclosure. The second disclosure is that we don't pay for this radio program. Nor are we paid for this radio program. We do it free. Well, more or less free. We do it, and we do pay for advertising on KTEM, but we advertise for the radio program, which is weird.
It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to us either.
In my mind, and figure out why we do that.
Yeah.
But we kind of do it mostly because we've been doing it for 20-some, how many years now? 23? 24?
22 for me and 23 for you. I started in 98, you were in 97. We said we were the Personal Wealth Coach, and the Personal Wealth Coach off of this radio program offers investment advice. That has a distinct, very clear definition under the law. It is a fiduciary investment advice. That means the advice has to be offered in the best interest of the client. And it goes a bit beyond any kind of best interest standard that you hear floating around. It is extremely best interest. And on the radio, we can't do that because we don't know all of you. We don't know if anybody's listening at all at the moment, as a matter of fact. So it's very hard to give customized in the best interest of the person listening if no one's listening. So that about sums that part up. We do, however, give good educational content on this program. It's not advice. We hopefully will give you the tools to recognize if advice is good or bad during the program. Usually we just give a bunch of blather and people kind of nod their heads and act like it makes sense. We know it doesn't. It's all right. So you want to talk about what happened in the market?
The market was there all week and it went down. Anything else you want to know? No, it actually the index, the S&P 500, which is the index that we prefer to use representing the U.S. domestic stock value as a whole. Actually, I don't like it, but it's probably the best one out there that's widely available and easy to read and updated quickly. It dropped about 0.5% for the week, closed at 34.65.39. Why did it drop? Why didn't it rise during the week? Despite the fact we got some good earnings numbers in during the week, it decided to fall. And the reason is the market is based on what they think, what the collective wisdom of people who are buying and selling stocks think is going to happen in the future. And why did it go down? Because two things. One, we have a surge in the coronavirus going on in the United States. The in the United States. The second wave, there's typically three waves in a pandemic, and the second wave is apparently on us. We're able to see it in a lot of detail. It's worse on Europe, but that was a little bit disappointing. The other thing is that the on-again, off-again discussion about the stimulus, the fiscal stimulus bill coming out of Congress, the market is anticipating eventually getting the bill passed.
Some kind of stimulus bill passed.
And they're dependent upon that. If it came out that nope, no stimulus bill, the market values would drop pretty dramatically because a lot of people, including governors at the Federal Reserve, said we're likely to go back into recession if we don't get a fiscal stimulus bill out of Congress this year. Well, not just this year, but probably before December. So you can kind of follow the discussions on the stimulus bill by watching the market go up and down. It goes down when it turns negative and it goes up when it turns positive. For instance, when the president tweeted that all negotiations were off till after the election, the market dropped. And then when he turned around and said he wanted a bigger bill than the Democrats were asking,
the market jumped.
So that's kind of what's driving the market right now. And is the money going to be there to keep businesses open? And that's a big thing. We probably want to talk about that. There's a lot of businesses kind of hanging on by their fingernails. And gradually they're dropping off one at a time. And we get some big new layoffs every week reported. Let's see, what else is going on in the market? The Standard & Poor's 500 stock index is up 7.56% year to date. It's down 3.22% from its high point at the end of September. It's important to recognize, though, your portfolio may not be doing that. The index is driven by about 10 stocks right now. And they are up dramatically, and the rest of the 500 stocks remain generally depressed from where they were at the beginning of the year.
Do you mind if I explain that a little bit? I think a lot of people have listened to the program and have heard it before, but it's worth repeating. And if you haven't been listening to the program, this would be a good time to learn about it.
My mother said that I don't mind very well, so I don't mind if you do that.
Okay. Your mother said you don't mind?
Yeah. She did. She didn't mind. So I don't mind if you do that.
Okay. The S&P 500 and most of the big indexes, and by big, I mean like lots of stocks. This isn't true of the Dow indexes. But the S&P 500, which is, there aren't a whole lot of Dow, the Dow industrial mutual funds. You're going to get an S&P 500 mutual fund possibly, but I've not even seen one for the Dow. The way the S&P 500 works, it's called capitally weighted. What does that mean? It means that the bigger the company, the more of the weight of the portfolio is distributed to it. So if you had $10 that you were investing right now into the S&P 500, which you can't do directly, and even these tracking funds don't do it exactly. If you put $10 in right now, the vast majority of that money would go to the 10 biggest companies in the index at this particular moment.
And we need to define what biggest is. Biggest doesn't mean that the company is necessarily the biggest. It's the total valuation of its stock on the market. That's how the companies are. A company with a high capitalization, or which we call them large cap companies, are companies whose stock value as a total is very high. For instance, Tesla, I think, is still bigger than General Motors, even though it isn't.
Well, it is according to the market. And I think that's the big thing, is that this is the hard thing. What are we talking about? How can the market not be the same value as the value of the thing? What is that about? Well, this is a really good definition to have too. If you have a house, it's pretty easy to value it. It's based on what people will buy it from you at. If you have a business that's not for sale, and you need to declare what it's worth in a filing somewhere, you tally up all of your ownership. So when you're about to get a mortgage, the bank might want to know what all of your assets are. Are you selling those assets today? No, they don't want you to sell those assets today. They want you to have those assets. But is the value that you're presenting to the bank the actual value of those assets? And that's a big question. It's supposed to be fairly done, and the bank spends some time making sure that the right accountants and so on sign off that say this is correct. But the reality is you don't know what something is worth until you sell it. Well, the stock market is buying and selling an asset all day long, so it has a really good idea of what it's worth on the market. If you have a company with lots and lots of real estate, for instance, it's really hard to value that, because if you have $10 million of real estate acres, that takes a while to sell. What if you have $10 billion of real estate and it's all in one big tract of land? And that happens in a lot of these really, really big positions. How do you value that property? Because you haven't had $10 billion of real estate sell in that area in the last 10 years since you bought it. So when you look at the assets inside of a company, that's a different valuation technique than looking at what the market values it as. If you take all of the stocks, say a company has 100 stocks and each stock is worth $1, the market capitalization of that company is $100. There you go. That was a really, really scare off all the boys and girls explanation of what capitalization is.
I think you meant shares instead of stocks.
Yes, shares, stocks. They are in some ways synonymous, but it is less confusing to use the word share.
Yep. And that's the large cap companies. The largest of the large cap companies, in which some of them are in the S&P 500, some of them aren't, but the main large cap companies are generally called FANG. Facebook, Amazon, Alphabet, Google.
Apple. So you got three A's in the FANG. So it's really FANG.
And then Netflix.
But the thing is, you said Alphabet and Google. The G in FANG has been removed. There is an N. It's the FANG.
Yeah, but it...
We're messing up our acronyms.
I believe Google is rather than just calling it Alphabet, but that's beside the point. But anyway.
You already said Alphabet, and that's what it's listed as.
You're right. It is listed as Alphabet.
But the symbol is still a G. So
anyway, these few companies, which are priced in most cases in astronomical levels, the company would have to... Somebody pointed out that for Tesla to justify the price of its stock, everybody in the United States would have to buy one. And I don't think that's going to happen in the immediate future. And that means General Motors would be out of business and Ford would be out of business and things like that. Anyway, the stock market indices, particularly the S&P 500 and some of the others, are driven by these 10 companies. The important thing to recognize is that those companies are, generally speaking, overpriced. There are still pockets of value in the market that are underpriced by any definition, because of the pandemic. And the reason these companies that are so highly priced are highly priced mostly because of the pandemic, and eventually the pandemic will be over. So that's one of the things we have to deal with. The market, the S&P 500 stock index is up dramatically for the year, up over 7.56% for the year is not too dramatic, but still it's up quite a lot, whereas the vast majority of stocks are actually down year to date. They reflect the fact that the market is, the economy is running along at about 80% of the activity that we saw a year ago. Treasury notes did do something interesting. They rose 12. The yield on the 10-year U.S. Treasury note rose 12.1% in the week at 0.836%. Now that's the highest yield since June. Remember, 0.836, you loan the money to the government, you get 0.8% per year for 10 years. But that's half the yield it carried a year ago. So it's still way down compared with where it was. But the yield curve is steep, keeps getting steeper, which signals that the bond market, the people who buy and sell bonds on the Treasury market, have concluded that next year, and sometime within the next 12 months or so, we will see a distinct improvement in the economy and the demand for loans will go up. West Texas Intermediate crude oil, WTI, dropped 2.5% to 39.75. That fell below the $40 point, the break-even point for many companies. Again, this is a situation where the COVID-19 infections had an effect on that, because the demand for oil over the next few months is thereby predicted to fall, because there's a very strong correlation between the amount of oil that people use and the prevalence of COVID-19 infections. If infections go up, people don't fly as much, they don't drive as much, so they don't use as much oil, and the price of oil tends to drop. It's COVID driving almost everything in the markets.
Right. Bank rates on a 30-year mortgage right now. You know, usually when I do these quotes, and over the past several years, I throw them in occasionally. We say, what's the average rate being offered out there on a 30-year mortgage? And what does that mean? Well, the average credit score is a 700. It's a 30-year with 20% down payment. Okay, that's what we're talking about. It's all over the place. We've got some that are in the 2.7 range, some that are in the 3.5 range. Why is there such a big difference with the same credit score, with the same assets and so on? It's because there's a lot of money sitting on the sidelines right now, but it's not all in the same place, or it's not all kind of universally evenly spread apart. Some banks have less money than other banks. The banks with the most amount of money will want to loan that money out at a lower rate because they're just trying to get it off their books. They're trying to get some income from it because they have to turn around and give income to the people that are depositing with them. So the average rate for people in the 700 range on the credit score with a 20% down is about 3.5%. But if you have a 700 credit score, you can get a 2.8% loan right now. So just be aware that if you're the average is not what you should be going on in this case. It's like a lot of the other stuff that's going on. This is all COVID related. A lot of people are hoarding cash right now because they don't know how long it's going to go on. We mentioned this in the newsletter. Corporations are sitting on an absolute record amount of cash because they're concerned. They don't know what their profits are going to be looking like in a month or a day or a minute. So they are holding on to cash so they don't have to lay off more than they already have. And where do they keep that cash? I can assure you that unless the corporation is a bank, they do not keep it on site. So General Motors, you mentioned them, Tesla, where do they keep their cash? They keep it in banks.
Those shoebox.
Shoebox. Big shoeboxes. Very large shoeboxes. They keep it in banks. And those banks need to make a profit. If they don't make a profit, they go away. Their shareholders don't like them if they don't make a profit. So they want to loan that money out. But there aren't that many people making loans, getting new loans, compared to the amount of new money out there to loan. And that's why the interest rates are as low as they are. It's a supply and demand situation. So that just being said, if you're purchasing a house, the interest rates are even different than if you're refinancing a house. Usually there's a tiny difference. It's not the case right now. Purchases right now all appear to be at lower interest rates than refinancing. A month ago, it was the other way around. Refinance rates were a lot lower than purchase rates. So figure that out, if you will.
A lot of it also has to do with the secondary market. When a loan company, a mortgage company, sets up a mortgage for you, if you've had this happen either on a refinance or a new mortgage, it doesn't hold that loan very long. It sells it on the mortgage market. And the mortgage market is driven by people and corporations and banks and insurance companies who buy the bonds that your mortgage is turned into. It used to be very, very simple. You went to the savings and loan, you made a mortgage on a house, and the savings and loan took the savings from your neighbors and loaned it to you for your mortgage. And everybody was very simple, very straightforward, but it doesn't work.
I have to throw this in here because I can't help myself. Imagine It's a Wonderful Life, Jimmy Stewart, standing on top of the savings and loan countertop,
Your money's not here. It's in Jim's house. It's in Bob's house.
Yeah. So that's the way it used to happen. They would take the money and they would loan it out and they wouldn't sell it to anyone. So your reserves had to be kept up. And if everybody showed up at once, they wouldn't be able to give the money out.
And Jimmy Stewart, immediately after Jimmy Stewart said that, the mob went to Bob's house and Jim's house looking for their money.
Yes. Started picking and axing the walls, trying to find the money in the house.
Which is the difference between capital and cash.
Right. As soon as it's invested somewhere or loaned out, it's no longer money. And that's something that's a pretty fundamental truth across all markets, is that once you have purchased something with the money, it stops being money. Isn't that amazing?
Becomes capital.
Sometimes. Hey,
we do have a question.
Yes, we do. It's a good one.
And it's from John. It's "Don't fight the Fed," in quotes. Where did this originate and what does it mean? And is it still true? I actually read the book, Winning on Wall Street, which was published in 1970. When I first started investing, by Marty Zweig. And he was quite a famous investment advisor at that point. If he was an investment advisor, he wrote the book Winning on Wall Street. And it was a good book. It basically said, invest in stocks, buy low, sell high. And one of the things he said in there is don't fight the Fed. Now, whether he originated the term or...
It had been around before. It's been around in some version. It used to be, in fact, you can look this up. Don't fight the Bank of England is several hundred years old. It's the same concept.
And then is it still true? Yeah. By don't fight the Fed, the meaning of that is the Fed is raising interest rates to slow the economy down, we're probably going to have a recession and the market is going to crater at some point.
So you shouldn't be buying the big growth stocks at the moment when they're doing that.
Because the big growth stocks, when they report their earnings, they're going to find out that the cost of their loans that they've been borrowing a lot of money to grow their company, the cost of those loans goes up and they can't borrow as much money for as low a price. The other thing is, if interest rates go up very much right now with the federal deficit and the federal debt as high as it is, it's going to really suck up a tremendous amount of cash out of the economy just to pay the interest rates on that. And taxes will have to go up and a lot of things will have to happen. So it's sort of illogical. I mean, the market should not respond the way it does to the Federal Reserve raising and lowering interest rates, but it does. One of the reasons the market is at record levels right now is simply because the Fed has lowered interest rates to the lowest level they've ever had them.
Right. And when someone says that, you should take it as one of the pieces of information. You should never just base all of your investments on what the Fed is doing. Not unless you're very, very simplistic in your outlook. That's just a quick side note. Don't fight the Fed just means if they're raising interest rates, you probably shouldn't be getting into growth stocks. And if they're lowering interest rates, you probably shouldn't be getting into utilities and vice versa.
The other thing you shouldn't fight is the ticker. Don't fight the ticker. In other words, if the market is going up and it's just consistently going up, the wisdom is don't be selling. But that's not a very good philosophy, I think.
And we have another question from John. And the question is, he sent a picture of the Wall Street Journal, as he does. I think this is the Wall Street Journal. It's hard to tell. And it says, U.S. credit scores rise even in downturn. His question is this the next countrywide scandal, like in the Great Recession, Countrywide was giving loans to people that couldn't afford it? Are the banks dumbing down credit scores to generate more loans? Well,
no.
If you think back to about a month and a half ago on the radio, maybe more than that, maybe 3 months ago on the radio program, we spent some time talking about the new methodology that the credit scores are going through. And people think that credit scores are just like this universal number, but there are lots and lots of different versions of credit scores. The Fair Isaac is usually the one that people look at and say this is the gold standard, but it isn't necessarily the gold standard. I think there's all silver standard. There isn't a gold standard. There's a lot of Fair Isaac different types of scores. Kind of universally, Fair Isaac before the pandemic even started was looking at personal loans, So SoFi or there's tons and tons of these kind of private banks that say, hey, refinance all of your credit card debt for 5%, or they never say a round number, 5.99% or something like that. Those are private loans. And they're intended to be slightly longer term, but they're still considered consumer loans. And they used to have a fairly negative impact on your credit score. Now they have a slightly less negative impact on your credit score. And that's probably part of this credit score improvement. But the reality is that the banks don't want to go under. We're not having a lot of bank failures right now because there's so much cash out there. But if you've been through a bank refinance lately or a purchase lately, they're not asking less questions. They're asking more questions, even though you have a good credit score. Banks are scared just like everybody else right now. They are quite unwilling to loan people money if they don't think they can pay for it. Even though they're trying to loan out all that money, they're still being extra careful. I think that there may be some mortgage fraud going right now. There always is. And there may be more than usual going right now. But it doesn't have to do with credit scores. It has to do with people that are taking advantage of the banks in other ways. Because the credit scores haven't really changed that much over this time period. As far as, you know, they're slightly up. But if you look at the amount of cash in the economy right now, that's a lot more than slightly up. And if you look at the amount of debt that's been paid off during the pandemic, people have been saving money and paying off debt so that they have money next time around. They've lowered their consumer spending. That all means that they should have a higher credit score. The credit score has nothing to do with whether or not you have a job. Seems like it would, but the banks don't know that on an average time period. Unless you're applying for a loan today, they don't know if you have a job or not. So they just assume you have the same job as the last application. So that's just a kind of a baseline. Just looking at the statistics, there's more cash and less debt. That means credit scores should go up. It's not a scam. It's just weird.
One of the problems with credit scores, and Jake mentioned this, is there's certain things that the credit scoring companies can know very readily. They can know how much debt you have because the people who loan you money report to the credit companies in exchange for being able to check your credit.
There's a credit bureau, and I just get this image in my mind. Growing up, you and mom, for those of you that don't know, old Baldy's my dad. I'm young Baldy or younger, and he's elder.
I am.
You had a bureau in the dining room when we were growing up, and the dining room moved around a lot. But every time as a kid I heard the word credit bureau, I just thought of money being stacked in that thing instead of the nice china and the so there's a credit bureau over there.
And that's kind of funny because I worked in high school in a credit bureau.
That seems very cramped quarters. I've seen the size of the bureau, and working in one would be hard.
And my mother owned it, and I really understand how they work and how credit scores are developed. And the fact is that the credit bureaus that existed at that time were mostly local. And so, you know, if you did a credit check on somebody, you'd call around and ask some people about them. You'd ask about their character, if they'd paid their loans, how much, and we literally could know how much cash they had. We literally, in those days, it's hard to imagine this, but from the credit bureau, I could call the bank and ask in round figures how much money a person had in the bank, and they tell me. It seems ridiculous today.
We have a few privacy laws that would get in the way of that today.
But the thing that the credit bureaus don't know today, the credit agencies that give you credit scores, they don't know whether you've got a job or not because your employer doesn't report to them. So all they know is here's how much debt you have, here's how consistent you've been in making payments on the debt, and are you paying the debt off, and what the last income was that you reported. They don't call you up every time somebody does a credit check and say, what's your income? So the credit score can be really high on somebody who's just lost their job. Of course, the issue is that if you actually want to borrow some money, they're going to ask you how much money you make. And this is the funny thing. There's no law that says you have to tell them the truth.
Well, there is. Once you sign the document that says, I attest that all the documents I've provided are true, if you sign that and it's not true, that's called mortgage fraud.
It's true for mortgages, but for the credit score basis, if you're getting a credit, and it's generally an online, well, in many cases, they offer credit cards to people without you having to say whether you have a job or not. And people are paying down their debt, just like corporations across the country. Some of them are borrowing long-term, but paying down their debt short-term. And by the way, Americans are generally doing that. We're refinancing our mortgages, which is long-term debt.
And paying off credit cards with the escrow when it comes back in.
And we're paying off the short-term debt as quickly as we can. That's a good, healthy thing to do if you're trying to lower your ongoing expenses to be more secure in an uncertain economic environment. And we definitely have an uncertain economic environment. Let me tell you why. If I can do that real quickly.
Sure.
We are seeing the second wave of the coronavirus come through.
Or the third, depending on how you look at it.
And, well, it's generally called the second wave by the epidemiologists. Some will take their word for it. The third one would come next year if we got it. But as that thing goes through, we just broke a record today, 83,000, for new virus detections, newly diagnosed people who have the disease COVID-19. If this continues to surge and we start getting lockdowns again, which we could do because the hospitals get overwhelmed, this could throw throw a spanner into the, I always think it's a fascinating, throw a spanner into the system. By the way, that's throwing a big wrench into a bunch of gears and a machine.
I like the word monkey wrench better just because I like being the monkey on the wrench.
Yeah, that could be it. But there's a lot of concern right now. And even though in relation to the question we got, is this the next mortgage crisis in essence? No, it's not, because in fact, mortgage lenders are being much more severe in their looking at people before they loan them money than they've been in the past, which is one of the reasons the price of houses are going up. We can talk about that later, too. It's getting close to commercial time.
It is. Let's go ahead and play some commercials. If you would like to join the conversation, we haven't actually given out the methodology. John's just good that he knows. If you'd like to ask us questions, we're only taking questions by email right now. And the questions would be through Jeff@tpwc.com or Jake@tpwc.com. And TPWC is thepersonalwealthcoach.com. You could actually send it to that too. And we do actually answer those questions. Isn't that amazing? It's like a email in radio program. It's a mix of the early 20th century and the early 21st. We're amazing. All right, let's play some commercials and we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. More of a Personal Wealth Coach. This is Jake McClure, and on the line with me, I have
Jeff McClure.
And we are here to fill your Saturday morning with the most boring of conversations. If you're not crying at this point, you should be. We're talking about the dreary science itself, economics, and why is it important today? And we'll try to do it in the most boring way possible. No. Hopefully be less boring.
We'll do a dismal job of discussing the dismal science.
Sounds great.
And
the other big thing that's going on right now that has an influence on the market, we've talked a lot about labor and we've talked about COVID, and definitely COVID is the single largest contributor to upward or downward movements in the market. But there's another thing going on in the background. We had the second debate in the presidential election, the second presidential debate. The first one, I think the best way of looking at that was like a senior citizen bum fight. The second one was about as opposite as you could get. It was very monotone. So we have this extreme swing back and forth. We have only one more radio program between now and voting day. Having said that, in Texas, according to the Texas Tribune, and they're looking at the 10 most populous counties in the state, 37.6% of the registered voters have already voted, and that doesn't include numbers from Friday. That is, early voting is getting up on close to 40% of all registered voters. The 2016, we only had 60% of registered voters voted. So we're getting on close to nearly that much have already early voted.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. You said voting day, and we talk about election day very regularly. But we ought to probably call it voting season. We ought to say there's about a 30-day period when people vote, and it's voting season. Yeah. That would make a lot more sense to me. I know that here in Salado, when I went to vote, the people were telling me that they were averaging 1,000 a day. And there have been many elections here in Salado where 1,000 people, maybe 1,000 people voted in an entire election cycle, and they're averaging 1,000 people a day. And when you consider that they've been open for a couple of weeks now and they're averaging 1,000 people a day, and Salado only has 2,500 people, that makes it sort of interesting.
Well, that's inside the city limits of Salado is 2,500. And that was according to a census that was 10 years ago. So if you just look at the number of houses that have been built in the Salado area called Salado, they've built more than 2,500 houses since then. And yep. Usually there's more than one resident. So this is why we do censuses.
That's a good idea. Which is, census, by the way, officially over now, by the way. If you didn't participate in the census, you don't count.
Ah, literally. You did a Sesame Street joke there. I like that. Yeah.
So what else is going on? Metals prices are shooting up, particularly aluminum, mm-hmm. which is an amazing thing. And it indicates that people are building things out of aluminum. China is importing great quantities of aluminum. They're importing record quantities of oil from the United States as their economy rebounds. That is just a fascinating issue to me, that here in the middle of an economy that is down roughly 20% in the United States, the price of aluminum is going upward steadily, and that's after the tariffs were dropped.
Yeah, this is interesting, kind of across the board concept. Our trade deficit has increased drastically. We're importing more than we had, and before the program we were talking about how the amount that we're we're importing is more expensive. It's not just that we're importing more, it's more expensive. So the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, if we're going to talk about bureaus, let's grab another one, reported that prices for U.S. imports increased 0.3% in September. Whoop-dee-doo, 0.3%, what does that even do? That's just 1 month, though. This is not annualized. And the month before that, it was 1% up in August, 1.2% in July, and 1.3% in June. That adds up. So just in from June, it was up 1.3, July up 1.2, August up 1. You're already talking about 3.5% increase in the price of imports over a very short period of time. Go ahead.
Big piece of that is oil. You got to take the oil out to get, and it goes up and down, and it affects the price of imports quite a lot. You have to pull the oil out of it where you can really, you know, if something's covered in.
Here's the thing. The fuel prices dropped 2.9% in September.
That's my point, is that you got to go in and pull oil prices out of all of those, because you can't see something that's covered with oil.
Right. It's all icky and slimy, and it's slippery and flammable. However, what that means is that the prices have actually increased more than that, because oil has been down during that time period.
Absolutely.
So expect to see some things costing more money. I think a lot of people are not seeing it immediately, because 4% is not a huge amount when you're looking at a jug of milk or something, when you're talking about a car, it makes a big difference. And people just aren't seeing it because they don't look at those big import costs very often.
And a lot of the imports come in and they're used to make other things. For example, many of the pieces that a car even made in the United States is made from are imported from someplace else. And so it takes a while for that extra cost to filter into the end thing that you buy. That's why I think we're going to see a little more inflation as we move into 2021. I would not be at all surprised to see some inflation in goods. Services are already up. The thing that won't go up, obviously, is the cost of eating out because there's not very many people eating out. But and the cost of groceries is pretty reasonable. But sooner or later, this is going to filter through. We have a lot of money in the United States economy right now, a lot of cash floating around. And at some point, people are going to start buying things with that cash.
Right. Once they're secure in knowing that they'll have a job next week, that cash becomes something they want to spend.
The other piece of news that seems to go along with that, and it's really ironic. This the various economic statistics that we're looking at, and we look at regularly, generally run together. For example, if the economy is down, you see the number of trucks on the highway fall. We are famous for having counted trucks during the recession in 1990 and 91 to figure out where the economy was going. And we could look at the number of trucks on the highway and say on I-35 and make a pretty good estimate about where the economy is at that point. And it would show up a month later in the statistics. The American Trucking Association said their truck tonnage index rose again in September. Matter of fact, it's pretty stout, to say the least. It's still 2.7% below where it was in September 2019, but that's a major recovery. People are beginning to order things and make things and do things that require trucks to fill up, so we're only 2.7% down from where we were a year ago in trucking.
And that's a good sign for the future. What is not showing is places that manufactured and sold locally, that sort of thing doesn't show up on the trucking indicator. But when we're looking at a big, big view, trucking is a big part of what we look at. We're still 20% below where we were at the top as far as the overall economy goes. But trucking is catching back up. That's a leading indicator. We tend to look at that and say, hey, that's a good sign for the future. There's also bad signs for the future in that our labor issues are getting worse, not better, over the recent past. It's slightly better as far as new people seeking unemployment than it was the week before. But you have to I when you're comparing two bad things and you say one is slightly better than another, it doesn't mean that things aren't getting worse. If one bad thing comes after another, and it's slightly not as bad as before, but it's still cumulative, it's still worse than it was. And that's one of the things. Our labor area is still having major issues. We just talked about a leading indicator in trucking. Labor is a lagging indicator. You get laid off when people don't make profits, and they only know they don't make profits after the fact.
What I look at is the number of people on all the unemployment programs, and there's different unemployment programs, and some of them are rising, some of them are falling. And the number is 23 million right now. Approximately 23 million Americans are officially out of work and looking for work and unable to find work. And everything I see, everything I hear about people who've advertised for a new employee are deluged with applications. But there's 23 million people in the United States officially out of work versus a year ago, 1.4 million were officially out of work. That gives you a picture of where things are, because the 23 million people who are out of work not only do not have as much money to spend in the economy, and they're not generating economic activity in the economy that they would be, but they also are scary people. They're scary because one of the things that the banks are concerned about when they make when they loan money to you for anything is, are you going to have a job? You may have a job right now. It may seem really, really secure, but we're laying off almost 900,000 people a week in the United States. So are you going to have a job in a week? Are you going to have a job in 2 weeks? Are you going to have a job in a month? And this is a big uncertainty in the economy, and we're not going to get a recovery until things return back to normal. And to do that, we're going to need a vaccine. And very frankly, it's going to be a while before we get one.
It's not necessarily a while before one comes out, but it has to be distributed. And that's supply chain stuff. And we've spent a lot of the last year talking about supply chain stuff. This is going to be hard.
One of the issues I think we need to focus on, and it's what's called a tail issue. It's low probability, but it could happen. The fact that a vaccine is functioning very well and it's in its full public test now, where they're going to get 30,000 people or 60,000 people vaccinated and then see if they catch the disease, how many of them catch COVID-19 and how severe it is. We don't know the effectiveness of those vaccines until these tests are over and everything's been analyzed. So we could wind up with a vaccine that was very, very safe and worked really well in small tests. And then when you put it in a bigger test, it could have side effects. We've got a couple of them stopped. Johnson & Johnson's was stopped, and Moderna had one that was stopped, and then they started it again. The issue that we don't know at this point is, in a large population, how much protection the vaccine provides. And if it only provides slight protection and a lot of people are catching COVID-19 who had the vaccine, and that vaccine is not going to be very effective. The best estimates that I've read from Moody's, which, and they tend to be pretty correct, says that about the third quarter of next year, which is a year from now, we'll start to see enough people that have been vaccinated that the economy begins to recover. But it'll be the end. They're saying now that it'll be the end of next year before we see enough vaccination that we can really get serious about recovering in the economy.
When we're looking at that in relation to GDP, there's this really kind of interesting concept. It means that we will slowly start to see people returning to normal life after vaccination. It's not going to be an overnight thing. So don't expect it to be. There are many pharmacies out there that are putting up signs saying that the COVID vaccine is not ready yet. They're encouraging people to get the flu vaccine right now. We would encourage that as well. We do encourage that. Please go out and get your flu vaccine. I just had a bout with it over the last several weeks, and flu is no fun either. And having the flu in the middle of COVID, it's more intensive than normal. It's like, well, what is this? Is this really the flu? So get vaccinated. You don't want to get sick for that in the middle of time when people are already out of jobs for other reasons. That's just not good. Coming back on the other end, don't expect an immediate recovery. Once that vaccine comes out, it's not going to be distributed evenly. Some places will get it first. Some people will get it before other people. When we're looking at the GDP coming into this, I recommend, where do we get this data? That's the Bureau of Economic Analysis in the government. They report GDP numbers. And the second quarter after its third look, the third estimate, and that is what they generally use as the final, is we had a drop in the second quarter of real GDP drop. A real shrinkage there was 31.4% down.
That's on an annualized basis, isn't it?
That is annualized. That is correct. And the quarter before that was 5%. Again, annualized. So this isn't exactly correct, but you can roughly divide by 4. And you'll see that you're talking about roughly 8% drop in one quarter. That is massive when you think about the fundamental infrastructure of business in the United States, of profits in the United States. That was grossly led by private sectors. The private services area and the private goods sector dropped more than the GDP. Well, government only dropped about 17%. Coming out of this, as the private sector starts to recover, expect the government sector to get hard. They're going to get hit. Even in the recovery, especially in the recovery, because their incomes lag. It's based on tax revenue. So again, don't expect the GDP to just suddenly jump up and get better because we have the vaccine and it's even being distributed well. Taxes take a while to get paid in. Expect layoffs in the government area unless we get a big stimulus there. Expect continued layoffs in the private area unless we get stimulus there. So go ahead.
And the reason there was only an 8% drop in the second quarter, 8% sounds like an awful lot. I mean, we dropped that much in one quarter, and then you annualize that by multiplying it times four, is because of the big stimulus program and the money that was given out by the government. If we don't have another stimulus, we'll sag because the coronavirus has not gone away. And we're out of time for the first hour, so we need to tell you some things about ourselves.
Yes. If you'd like to contact us off the air, so we actually do give customized fiduciary investment advice to individuals rather than education across the airwaves, the local phone number to get voicemail during the weekend and real live people during the week is
254-947-1111.
You can reach that same line toll free if you still have a landline at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. And I remember when, man, that was the only way you could do business is to make sure you had a toll-free number because, yeah, but everybody has cell phones now. So if you'd like to go to our webpage, it's thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. You can listen to radio recordings. Podcasts are going to be available very soon. You can email us directly at Jeff or Jake